This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome to The Rainbow Report. Those of you expecting to hear the dulcet tones of regular host Doug Pollard may be disappointed or excited, depending on your plans this weekend, to know that Doug is keeping the home fires, but not the bush fires, burning in Daylesford, where he is wearing his hat as chill-out president. Instead, you have me, Cathy Anderson, filling in the big man's chair. I'm ably assisted in the studio by Andy Noonan, news journalist with Southern Star, and the thoroughly outspoken Ron Thiel. Good evening to you both.
Good evening, Cathy.
Good evening, and can I just say that was a fabulously introduced program.
Oh, thank you. Well, we've got an hour to go, so don't jinx me just yet. All right, on with the show. There's been quite a bit of secret squirreling in Canberra this week by members of Victoria's Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, who are pushing the pollies for, among other things, a sexual orientation and gender identity anti-discrimination bill, and a formal stance on the issue of civil unions. Co-convener Hayley Conway will join us shortly to fill us in on her meetings and progress of the lobby's agenda. For many in the community, retirement is a long way down the track. Deborah Peppard is planning to build a gay-only retirement village in central Melbourne, and she wants as many people as possible, from Gen Y to baby boomers, to have their say about the type of place they'd like to eventually kick back with their Maltese Shih Tzus and bingo nights via an online survey. She'll come into the studio later to have a chat with us with tea and crumpets. International Women's Day is coming up on March the 8th, and although Melbourne's events are pretty low-key, Sydney is holding a major march and rally which coincides with Mardi Gras Parade. We'll get the lowdown on that event and throw a little feminist debate into the melting pot tonight with our guests Beth Eldridge and Uma Kalishtaki. We'll also let you know about all the exciting things Joy is doing for the day. And we'll catch up with the spin host Tim Newton, who's driven the Joy Bus to Sin City for a live broadcast of Mardi Gras, as well as using the Bush Telegraph to Doug Pollard for an update on Chill Out, which this week was almost cancelled due to the bushfires. And last but never least, Kay Sarai will be espousing her wisdom on all things festival. Welcome back to The Rainbow Report with me, Cathy Anderson, Ron Thiel and Andy Noonan. As co-convener of the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby in Victoria, Hayley Conway is one of those driven activist types who works behind the scenes to push the GLBTI community's agenda. This week she was in Canberra holding back-to-back meetings on a range of issues, and she's on the line now to give us all the goss. Good evening, Hayley.
Hi, Cathy. How are you going?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm liking the big man's chair, I've got to tell you.
Yeah, look, it's a good-sized chair.
It is. I don't quite fill it out as well as he does. But anyway, that's another story. So tell us, you've been in Canberra for a week lobbying on a whole range of issues. Give us a lowdown.
I did go to Canberra, and I was there for 4 days, and I met with various members of the government, the Greens, and the Coalition, basically touching base on the lobby's agenda for the next year and into the federal election. And then talking about, I guess, what some of our big projects might be in for the next 5 years. So civil unions, the Social Security Act reform that we saw recently and how that's going to be rolled out, sexual orientation and gender identity anti-discrimination law. And, yeah, and also we discussed some things like community legal education and how that sort of thing might best be facilitated through funding from the federal government.
All right, well, going on to this bill, I mean, it's quite a mouthful. What is it and why do we need one?
Okay, well, to alleviate the mouthful, we call it the SOGI, anti-discrimination law.
Okay, right. Awesome.
Very appealing. Now, this anti-discrimination law will be similar to the Sex Discrimination Act and those sorts of things. So basically outlines the kinds of behaviour that is automatically unacceptable within society. So, and based on someone's sexual orientation or gender identity, which the current Sex Discrimination Act doesn't cover.
Hayley, yeah, it's Ron Thiel here. Good to be speaking with you. From memory, we don't have an anti-discrimination bill in Australia. Is that still the situation?
Yeah, that is correct.
Right, and so is it particularly significant that this will be the first one? I mean, there's lots of other groups who'll be discriminated against. Is there a move to roll this all into one, or sort of what's the strategy behind just pursuing one related to sexual orientation and gender identity?
There is some movement on a human rights charter, and obviously there's a consultation going on at the moment around the country with regard to that, and certainly that's something that's on the table. But our concern is that we don't want to wait if a human rights charter is going to be a long way down the track. We think that this legislation should be in place, and it should be in place now to protect people who are already suffering discrimination within society.
Hayley, Andy here. With the consultation on this particular bill, I know the Human Rights Commission have been taking submissions on different issues around this, but from a lobbyist point of view, how much consultation is the community getting?
My understanding is that it's not enough, but it is difficult to make people aware that these consultations are happening and ensure that they do have the time and feel like they can go and say, this is what I think about this thing, and this is why it's important, and these are the things that you need to include. Like, that's a pretty high level of education about the way that the legal system works, the way that Parliament works, and the way that these laws actually affect people's lives. So while there are a lot of consultations that go on, I think that people are not able to access them as well as they could be.
So this bill, if it came into effect, would it basically affect people in the workplace, or is it in all areas of life? I mean, what's the impact of it?
It would affect all aspects of life as far as the legislation went, basically. So it would be up to the government at the time to decide exactly who would be exempted from this sort of law. So at the moment, religious institutions often have exemptions from large swathes of anti-discrimination law, and this is the kind of thing that we would hope to avoid with some soggy law.
Yeah, so just to give us, just sort of a little bit of the sort of human interest side for a tick, Hayley. I mean, it's always fascinated me to know that sort of one of our people, you know, who's possibly knocking around a girl bar on a, you know, Friday night, having fun, having a few drinks, can then, you know, put on the proverbial twin set and pearls and go up and actually knock on these famous and powerful people's doors. I mean,
I don't want to know what you're insinuating about.
Is it a good reception which you get? I mean, is it friendly? Is it, you know, interesting? What's it like in the day of a sort of community lobbyist?
Oh, look, it certainly differs from person to person that you visit. Obviously, a lot more people are far more approachable, and certainly there are parliamentarians who are members of our community and really have a thorough understanding of these issues and go out of their way to be helpful, and that's fantastic. And then there are other people whose doors you may need to bang down to get in. But it's a really interesting experience, and certainly was, it's quite undescribable, I think, and also I feel a little sorry for some of those parliamentarians who are maybe getting a little short on their vision, weren't really sure who I was, wearing a suit, I wasn't quite sure, man or woman, what's going on. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it's a sort of real mixed bag, and the sort of day, I suppose, when you get up in the morning, you really wouldn't have a clue what it holds in store.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, we do line up meetings on the day, so you can't always be prepared for everyone who you're going to see and that sort of thing. So you've really got to be on your feet all the time.
So, Hayley, the bill is one of the issues. You also mentioned civil unions, which is certainly it's more of a national issue, which is, I guess, why you're taking it to federal politicians. Can you give us any idea of what sort of progress you made on that?
Yeah, look, civil unions is certainly going to be a big issue that we'll be pushing right into the federal election, and we want to ensure that it's something that is on the agenda and an unavoidable debate, and that people's positions will need to be very clear and that people's votes will move based on that. So we'll be speaking with the ALP and looking at their national platform coming into the federal election, which will obviously be decided at their conference this July, and then also looking at what the Coalition are saying, looking at what the Greens are saying, commissioning some polling and seeing what the community has to say as well.
Yeah, so this is a
we'll see some movement.
Yeah, so this is a shift in strategy away from the M word towards civil unions, is it?
Well, it's certainly not a strategy from civil unions to marriage or from marriage to civil unions, but we want to see some movement on a federal level and call it marriage and / or federal civil unions, marriage and maybe relationship recognition is just a bit confusing. So I'm just going to go with one term for now.
Hey, in Queensland, there was a galaxy poll taken fairly recently, and what came out of that was, I think, around 60% of Queenslanders said that they supported civil unions in the state. Is that something that the lobby would look to do on a national scale at all, in sort of joining up with other lobbies in taking a poll out nationally?
Certainly commissioning a national poll would be part of a broader strategy, along with looking at, I guess, the understanding that people have of the difference between marriage and civil unions, and do people even care which one it is, or if it's neither, or who has access to what. So definitely a national poll is a useful way to move forward in a federal election.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Hayley, for joining us this evening. I'm glad to have you back.
Thanks, Kathy.
What do you think about that, guys? I mean, that's obviously an ongoing thing for people to go behind the scenes, you know, talk to these politicians, because that's pretty much where it happens. It's not us standing back here and just shouting at people. It is getting into their offices, having meetings, you know, and pushing the agenda. I mean, you've been a co-convener of the lobby, Ron. How important is it?
You've got to remember that that these are almost entirely volunteer efforts. I mean, we didn't ask Hayley about it specifically, but she's almost certainly given up days, if not weeks of her time, both to get across the issues and keep abreast of them and fix it up and then finally do the presentations. And it's a pretty grueling, pretty low-cost lifestyle. So I think it's fantastic. But we've seen so much change in the last 12 months that I think that just opens the door for more change. And it's fantastic that these people are prepared to do our work for us.
Mm. Ron, when you were approaching politicians, what sort of response did you get when you were with the lobby?
Well, we had this difficult sort of position of not first knowing, and this is going back to 2004, not really having a community consensus about how to respond to Howard's Marriage Amendment Act. And that was a key problem. The community simply wasn't divided on it, and I mean, insofar as we had any influence at all, he created a wedge there which he just drove straight through the community and pretty much shattered us, arguably, you know, to this day. But look, we saw lots of politicians, and it's pretty much, you know, the same as Hayley said. On one end of the spectrum, you've got the ones who are into community development, understand what we're doing, the social justice people, and will actually help you through the process. At the other end of the spectrum, we had liars. We had real liars, like the Howard government ministers, who stood up in Parliament and just argued lie after lie after lie. And that sense of disgust of how senators particularly could do that stays with me to this day.
All right. Well, you're listening to the Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is the Rainbow Report.
Welcome back to the Rainbow Report with me, Kathy Anderson, Ron Thiel and Andy Noonan. We've recently discussed the proposed gay retirement village in Balan, which is not far from Daylesford, but there's another very similar project on the boil which will be built in the city, which will no doubt suit those not keen for a tree change in their old age. Deborah Peppard is the brains behind the project, and she joins us in the studio to discuss it. Good evening, Deborah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. So tell us a little bit more about the project and where it's at the moment.
Well, thanks, Kathy. Where it's at the moment is we're conducting a survey. We ran some focus groups last year to really determine what the community wanted in a retirement village rather than my vision. My vision has always been to build what the community wants. There was just so much disparity between what people wanted in the focus groups. We decided that the most responsible thing to do was take the information to the wider community and allow everybody to have their say. So we're currently in the process of collecting quality data from people that, you know, are having an input into where they want it, what they want it, stuff like that.
So when you did the focus groups, you said there was just some disparity, because I'd imagine you have a whole list of things that people want, and in the survey certainly does, what they want, where they want it, that type of thing. What things did people disagree on?
firstly, the need for it to be in a gay and lesbian friendly community or suburb. We had one half of the focus groups very, very emphatic that it needed to be in a current gay and lesbian friendly suburb. And we had other people saying, if you're going to build us a community, we don't care where it is as long as we're surrounded by gay people with the things that we want it to be in. So we're happy to go out further into the suburbs, you know, to get more land. So that was one key thing. Another key thing was the difference in people wanting nursing home facilities or assisted living options versus the people that didn't. My preconceived idea was that people would want, you know, tri-level cares, you know, tri-level, tri-care, and that wasn't the case. In the focus groups, it was some people were very adamant that they don't want to be seen as an old person, so they didn't want nursing home options, which was a surprise to me again. So, again, reinforced the need to take it to the wider community in a survey form.
Mm. So with this, when they say gay-friendly area, so people wanted to have want to have a gay retirement village in Commercial Road?
Well, yeah. the most popular suburbs, we've done it by city council areas, and the most popular at the moment are City of Melbourne, City of Port Phillip, City of Yarra, so nothing surprising there. But City of Bayside, Hampton area, Sandringham area, and City of Doncaster are actually coming in not too far behind those, which is good because it will come down to cost and land, and you know, if to buy in a city, we have to go up. So if we're in the inner city areas, we have to build a high-rise retirement village to be able to have the volume of units in order to support the amount of facilities people want, which is communal areas and gyms and swimming pools and stuff. So you have to go up, but the number one choice for lifestyle or for living option is low-rise. So we have to balance the two options out.
Do you have a big vision? I know with the Balan facility, they were talking sort of big stages and you know, movie theatres and people coming up to do performances, and they had a really sort of big plan. But do you have any of those sort of ideas in the back of your mind, or are you waiting to see what?
Well, again, I think the responsible thing to do is build what the survey tells us is wanted. However, my vision has always been to have, I guess, a safe community that's got all the quality appointments and nice things that we like to have, and definitely with communal areas where people can socialise, where we can have, you know, bingo nights or, you know, whatever types of nights people want, so that there's communal areas to limit marginalisation, especially for single older people. But there's no big plans to have cinemas and stuff. I figure if we're in Metro Melbourne, you can go to the cinema. I'm not sure that we want to be that segregated and marginalised. I think we still want to, you know, go and socialise in normal everyday society, but we want stuff that's for us.
Do you find, though, that in general sort of people have actually thought through their sort of retirement, you know, lifestyle and laid, you know, realistic expectations for the sort of lives which they might be living in retirement?
I think that a lot of the people that are answering this survey are answering for in an ideal world, and some of that is not reality, but I want the ideal world so we can get as close to that as we can. So it's not going to be realistic to build a low rise in Pran, but we will, you know, make compromises where we need to.
I know there was, you talked about it being, you know, low rise and versus high rise and all that type of thing. Are you finding, you know, and when we spoke earlier about this, you were talking about it not being a segregated thing, but essentially it kind of is in a way, isn't it, having you know, a gay only kind of thing? Why do we need a gay only retirement village, do you think?
Well, I think it comes down to being able to retire in a comfortable, safe environment where there's commonality. I don't want to be in a retirement village myself where I'm getting asked, do you have kids? Do you have a husband? Did you get married? You know, I don't want to be asked those questions, and I want to be able to answer them honestly and have people understand. If I was single, I certainly want the opportunity to be meeting like-minded people as well, maybe that I can form companionship or relationships with. So the main reason is to have a safe space where there's commonality. I mean, you know, everybody else has kids, and I'm not saying that we don't, but there's a lot of us that don't have kids, and we have led a very different lifestyle. You want to be doing the do you remember when, and you don't want to be doing the do you remember when the kids went to blah, blah, blah school and played blah, blah, blah competitions, and you don't have anything in common with that.
Sure.
You want to talk. Although, of course, you know, there are so many gay people having kids these days that in 20 or 30 years it might well be a possibility. Do you find, though, also that there's much of a demand to have a village like that that's got mixed ages?
To fulfil the requirements of being a retirement village, it has to be 55 over or permanently retired. So you won't actually be allowed to purchase a unit in a retirement village unless it meets that requirement. So I'm currently working with the Retirement Advisory Board to make sure that we fit all the requirements to be able to call it a retirement village. That's what my plan was to build. But if we have to make some exceptions and call it something else in order to deliver what we need to deliver for the community, then we will.
Has there been any idea of gender, different sort of gender areas or spots within the retirement village?
The question's been raised, would I consider making it women only? Funnily, nobody's asked me if I'd consider making it men only, and that's, I guess, because I'm a woman. My idea is not to segregate us further within our own community, and I wanted to build a queer community, not a women community. My dream would be to build something that's very inclusive for the queer community, but I certainly see the need to have some women only and men only lounges or places, and hopefully when we build the communal spaces we'll take that into account, so we'll have some women only lounges and stuff that appeals to different genders.
At this stage you're collecting data, you've got an online survey and people can find that at your website. www.hrstaffn.com.au, and you can follow the links there for the retirement project.
You actually have to put in / GLBT retirement project.
Excellent.
It's a hidden page so that it's not available for the public.
Okay. So that's hrstaffnstuff.com.au/GLBT retirement project. So you're inviting people of all ages to get involved, and you'll have that up until the end of March, is that
right?
Yeah,
we might extend it until around about mid-April, just to give everyone the opportunity to, viral network and really pass it on to friends and family. It's really important that we collect the most quality data we can to build the right facility. So if you're 40 or 35 or 40, it's just as important for you to have your say, because hopefully this is being built for your future as well.
All right, that's brilliant. Well, thanks very much for coming in and good luck with the project.
Thank you so much.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
This is the Rainbow Report.
International Women's Day is on March 8, and many of our sisters will be spending it celebrating their sisterhood, funnily enough, and mourning our lack of equality in society. However, for many others, the day will have little significance. Beth Eldridge and Uma Kalashdaki are part of the International Women's Day Collective in Sydney, which organises a huge annual rally and march. This year, it's on the same day as the Mardi Gras parade. They're on the line now to explain why they think it's a day worth putting in the diary. Good evening, girls.
G'day. Kia ora.
Getting excited for the rally, no doubt.
Absolutely. We're exhausted, but we're excited at the same time.
Now, you, we spoke earlier about this, and you had 5,000 people turn up to last year's event, and you're expecting something similar this year?
Oh, we certainly hope so. Last year, we did a big push in the city where we hung the city streets with beautiful purple and green banners, inviting everyone to join us. And those banners have gone up again through the streets of the city of Sydney, down the CBD. And we're hoping to get the same numbers and improve on them even this year.
Now, your theme this year is awesome. I love it. It's called Why Aren't We There Yet? Sounds a little bit like the feminist in the back seat with her two daddies in the front. You know, are we there yet? Are we there yet? No, why? Why aren't we there yet? Judith, can you explain the reasoning behind it and the general philosophy of the event this year?
Well, the collective meets each year and decides, what the theme is going to be. And we all talked about, how far we'd come last year. Looking at, last year was the 80th year of International Women's Day celebration. So, that was a major landmark. But we wanted to look, with a major change in federal government, we wanted to look at how far we'd come in that time and what sort of progress had been made. And just after the years, after the decades of suffering, after the economic rationalism under Howard, we just saw so many women's services defunded and the mainstreaming of gender issues and women's pay still, 84 cents in the dollar for doing the same job. So many things were swept under the carpet. We were sort of scattered out of existence. Basically, feminism became very unfashionable. And the reality is that we never made it into equality. We were just told that we had it to get over it and get on with it.
How do you find the turnouts? I mean, one of the big things that's often said is that younger women just don't see the glaring need to turn up to marches like this and to support women's causes. Do you find that it's hard to speak to younger women about these particular issues?
I do think there's a lack of awareness there because they haven't yet had to confront a lot of the difficulties. I think that will probably become... they're moving into a different environment now. They haven't been through a period of unemployment.
The other thing is I think they take a lot of the gains for granted because they don't remember way back when those things weren't there.
Another thing internationally, just looking internationally, is that something that the march is hoping to look at as well? I mean, I know sort of in Australia things, although still inequalities are there, that internationally obviously things are much worse. Is that something that's
been put up? Absolutely. I mean, you know, you see young women now, you know, you can walk down the streets of Sydney hand in hand as a young lesbian couple, but there's countries where you'd be stoned to death for that. Mm. And yet, you know, we've just had the same-sex legislation introduced and there hasn't been the inclusion of a grandfather clause. And I think young women think, well, what's the problem? Mm. Older women are well aware of, you know, the difficulties faced there, having grown up, having to keep their sex lives in the closet, having to choose very carefully where they live, where they come out, some of them never coming out. I mean, some women are so far in the closet, they're in Narnia. And, you know, I work in an organisation with older women, and for them it's not just a personal choice, it's a matter of really serious danger to make that decision. There's women who have lost jobs, there's women who have lost their families, their communities, their livelihoods, their sense of self because of those choices. It's not just simply, you know, who you choose as your partner. Your whole life is on the line. You know, the notion of being declared the local community witch just because of your choice of sexuality is a very real issue for these women.
Of course, Beth, you know, there's a strong lesbian component to International Women's Day with the memory tent, which is something that our listeners may not be aware of and some who are travelling to Mardi Gras may get the opportunity to see. Can you explain a little bit about what that is?
Oh, it's fantastic. It was got together last year because of the very thing you've raised about young women not knowing our own her story. So we got it together and lots of women who've been forgotten or aren't remembered or are remembered in our minds, we're all brought to the surface. And it's such an honour to be in that tent. It vibrates with energy and the excitement and joy and the faces of the women who come in and the ones who bring their daughters and granddaughters in. And then those women are also influenced. So I think it's a very, very exciting time. The other thing is that we've got, I'm proud to say that many of the women that are going to be honoured this year, both locally and internationally, are women of colour. Audre Lorde, of course, as many people know, is an African-American woman who had a huge influence. Our own Penny Wong, Pratibha Palmer, who's of Indian descent from Britain, who's made films, is well known. We're also looking at Dorothy Porter, Del Martin, Phyllis Lyon. Those are really famous and important women in our history. We're also recognising Julie McLaughlin, all women who've absolutely had huge influence and impact on women.
It's not just bios, though. I mean, the memory tent is a place where objects from the past are there to trigger conversation, intergenerational conversation,
right.
Conversation between different women.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got, you know, pictures of things from the past, objects from the past. We've got union banners. We've, you know, had a lot of support from the unions putting material in. Work that women have made themselves, different bits of memorabilia, clothing, school books, things that will spark conversation about what it was like for them growing up. You know, whether they were straight or lesbian or, you know, transgender. It just depends on where they were coming from.
I tell you what, it was the most popular tent and we had to practically shoo the women. Time, ladies and ladies. No one wanted to leave the memory tent.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be an awesome event once again this year, and we thank you very much for your time this evening for sharing it with us.
That's all right, and there'll be lots of lesbian performers. Most of the performers.
I'm sure there's lots of lesbians going up. He'll be grateful to know. Thanks again. Well, that was two very chatty women from the International Women's Day Collective in Sydney. It sounds like an awesome event. What does it mean to you, Andy, as a woman, International Women's Day?
I wish I could say that it did mean more. And, in fact, this week I was just reflecting on it in the sense that I can see a lot of parallels between gay issues and women's issues yep. in the looking globally. I mean, it's something that it's so easy to forget living in Australia with all the rights that we are afforded, and even though there are inequalities, to look beyond our shores and realise that women and extending that to gay people really don't have those. It really is worse. Actually, there's one stat that I was looking at this week. It said, it's often heard, it's women do 2/3 of the world's work, receive 10% of the world's, only 10% of the world's income, and own less than 1% of the world's land. So I think that really speaks volumes.
It does. And certainly when, you know, there's a lot, like you mentioned, that, you know, well, whether we call them Gen Y, we dump them in it, but younger women, probably my generation as well, you know, I mean, my nod to International Women's Day each year is to wear a superhero T-shirt and appropriate, you know, Superman, which I'm wearing tonight. And it'll be, you know, Wonder Woman tomorrow, and you know, the Hellcat superhero on International Women's Day itself. But now that I realise there's only 1% of land ownership among women, I'm going to be going out and doing something about that.
Yeah, exactly. Buy a house.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au.
Informing, entertaining and provoking. This is The Rainbow Report.
Welcome back to The Rainbow Report with me, Cathy Anderson, Ron Thiel and Andy Noonan. We've had an SMS come through from an anonymous. He says, he or she actually, sorry, never forget countless GNL, gay and lesbian ALP members are now engaging polys individually and through their branches on discrimination, law amendments and relationship recognition. And the gay and lesbian community is very divided on relationship recognition, especially whether marriage or partnership prevails. Which side does the lobby represent, marriage or partnership, and by what mandate? I was referring to our earlier chat with Hayley Conway from the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. This year's Sydney Mardi Gras is shaping up to be a huge event if you judge it by the record number of marches. Thousands will make the annual pilgrimage from Hyde Park to Fox Studios along Oxford Street, including several groups travelling up from Victoria. Tim Newton is heading up Joy's live broadcast from the event, and he takes a break from painting his nails with glitter for the occasion to give us an update. How are you, Tim?
Hi, Doug. You sound a bit strange.
Yeah, I had a sex change just for International Women's Day.
Oh, gee, Doug, you look fabulous.
Yeah, yeah, I do. Thanks.
Hey, Cathy, you should be up here. It's going to be quite an event. Although, I have to say, walking around Oxford Street or the rest of Sydney, you really wouldn't know it's going to happen in 3 days.
Now, is that, you said before there's not very much media coverage, there's not a lot of hype about the Mardi Gras this year. How does that happen?
You know, the only thing I've heard about Mardi Gras this year is that there's been a huge drug bust. In fact, the way the media reported it, they said, leading up to this week's Mardi Gras, there's been a huge drug bust of amphetamines. I thought, yeah, that'd be all right. The media's done it again.
So does that mean it's going to be a quiet Mardi Gras party?
Well, yeah. Well, as you know, as I say, anybody takes drugs is a loser. So I'm sure it wouldn't be any of the GLBTI population taking these illegal pharmaceuticals.
Oh, no. No bottles of water sold at Mardi Gras party at all.
It really is quite quiet. Oxford Street looks great. It's got all the banners up. The Nations United, which is the theme for the year. The Joy team has been up here for the past 3 days getting the float ready. We are actually hosting a float this year, representing not only ourselves but all the other community broadcasters from around Australia which get behind queer programs and GLBTI programs. So we're going to be in there, and it's going to be a record number of participants, but the rest of Sydney really doesn't care.
Tim, it's a little bit surprising, isn't it, though, because this is the first time that Mardi Gras got big money from the state government, isn't it?
Yeah, apparently it's... Is that wrong?
It is, Tim. I'm talking to my mentor, Tim Newton. He taught me everything not to do on radio.
Did they let you back in the door?
Yeah, he promised not to swear, so we let him in.
Yeah, so what are they doing with... with the money, Tim. You won't mind me interrupting you, I'm sure.
$300,000 to $500,000 has been given to Mardi Gras. New Mardi Gras won't confirm the amount, but we're guessing it's somewhere between $300,000 and $500,000. Now, what it's been spent on, we don't know, but hopefully it'll show on the night. Certainly, they've been running out of profit for the past 3 years, and we hope that continues. So it'd be interesting to see where the money's being spent this year.
Yes, well, hopefully it'll be on general fabulousness. And it's all being telecast this year, is it?
Yeah, well, Foxtel have got a pay for gay subscription. Mm. So if you do want to go onto Foxtel and pay, I don't know what the amount is, but, I mean, let's face it, who wants to watch Foxtel when you can listen to Joy do it properly?
Well,
tell us about this. This is very exciting because Joy is Joy's had joining a big community. You're getting a whole lot of community radio stations together for one massive big broadcast.
Yeah, well, after last year, we've taken the next step and we've got three or four radio stations who are taking it live, plus the entire community radio network are taking a delayed two-hour special. And they can play that any time over the next week. So that's a pretty big jump from what we did last year, which was really just across Joy and 2SER here in Sydney. But what we'll be doing is broadcasting from 7 p.m. this Saturday until around about 11 or 12, or, you know, whenever the last slot goes by. We've joined forces with the Bobby Goldsmith Foundation and we'll be part of their their spectator area. And we'll have our own little spot. Last year we were actually stuck on the parade route, so at least we've got our own home.
Rightio, we've got a clear view. Well, we look forward to listening to your broadcast from 7 on Saturday.
Fabulous. Great to talk to you, Kath.
Thanks, Tim. Enjoy. Is anyone going to Mardi Gras, you guys?
No.
Well, I'm sure somebody's going, but I'm not.
Yeah, well, there's quite a few Victorians going up there. We had Felicity come in from Vic Presents, who'd organised to go, and she's doing. Vic Presents didn't get enough numbers to go as that group, so they're going as a bushfire. Because the theme this year is, you've got a cover story on it this week.
Yeah, Nations United. Yes, we're looking at what's going on globally for GLBTI issues.
Hmm. I like that, you know, Nations United question mark.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Hmm. What are those countries that don't actually accept us, or that actually kill us off, which is kind of cheery.
A little more extreme.
Yeah. Getting into the Mardi Gras spirit.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Exactly.
Well, I guess the big news for this week in terms of festival is huge. I mean, there's Festival City, and I know we're coming up talking more about festivals because everything coincided this weekend. So we've got Mardi Gras this weekend and also Chill Out, which this week was sort of under fire. Quite literally, there was some damage to the area surrounding Daresford. There's a lot of hoo-ha about whether or not the festival would actually go ahead. But the Disco Stampede event is all systems go, and President Doug Pollard joins us on the line to tell us all about it.
Hello, Gabby. Well, how are you?
Yes, I'm very good. How's the festival all coming together? Oh, I'm assuming you've got your afro and your glitter pants and you're all set.
That's right. Well, you ask Kay. She was going to make me a disco suit, but she couldn't find enough yellow satin. it's all coming together beautifully. The town looks really nice, especially now it's been raining for a couple of days, so everything is getting washed clean.
It's interesting. You were talking. We were talking earlier, and you said that you're getting a lot of misinformation out there that from all corners of Australia, and people phoning up saying how much of Daresford is left from the bushfires.
Exactly. Yes, I've been fielding calls from Perth and Adelaide, and even just as close as Sydney, people assuming that the bushfires came into town, but they didn't. The nearest it came is about 10 minutes drive outside of town. They never touched the town itself, and apart from what you see on some of the approach roads, most of the countryside is still intact. It was actually quite a small fire compared to the other ones.
Unfortunately, a small fire that destroyed some of the property of our last year's president, Jim Culbertson.
That's right, yes. His farmhouse is still standing and looks remarkably untouched, but he lost outbuildings, feedstock, fences, quite a few trees, his paddocks, four out of his six alpacas, and the other two were too badly injured and had to be put down, and about half of his cattle, but because he had nothing to feed the other half with, they had to go to the abattoir too, so...
The festival this year, Doug, is sporting a major personality in the form of Leo Sayer.
That's right. We've got Leo Sayer at Carnival Day on Sunday. He's our headliner. We've also got Baba and the Top Twins and, of course, the wonderful Dolly Diamond.
Well, it sounds as though everything is all systems go, and we're very glad to hear it because, obviously, there's a lot of people that that chose Chill Out over Mardi Gras this year. So if anyone wants to get into last-minute accommodation, because I'm saying there's a fair bit still around, what's the...
A lot of people have been staying away, so there's accommodation available. Come on up and enjoy more than just one day. It's more fun that way.
All right, and they can log on to...
chilloutfestival.com and look at the accommodation providers who support us and give one of them a call.
Fabulous. All right, Doug, all the very best for the weekend, and I'll join you for a dance at the carnival.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. A snug with Cathy Anderson.
All righty.
Yeah,
you should be so lucky. Okay.
All right, see ya.
He's still on the
still
line.
Still on the line.
Your
dream came true.
I was hoping to get a sneaky one while he wasn't listening.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
This is the Rainbow Report.
This weekend is a big one, as we've been talking about, with Mardi Gras and with Chill Out. So no matter what state you're in, you're guaranteed to have a gay old time. Kay Sarah is here in the studio. She takes a break from sequin sewing and peeks under the festival bonnet to ponder the importance of mass queer gatherings.
Well, thank you, Cathy. You make it sound so important. She says, reading from her page, "Pardon my hot glue gun, but I've got a sea of sequins to attach and less than 48 hours in which to do it." So are the thoughts of many a queen planning to take on Oxford Street for the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade. It's a big night with a big history. Even today, where mediocrity rules, the parade still managed to give the fabulous finger up to the hetero world. Quite right, too. A volley of semi-naked men in the brace of camp choreography and the roar of leather-clad women on motorbikes has possibly done more for law reform in this country than hundreds of academic studies into homophobia. As Kate Winslet aptly put it in her Oscars speech, "I'm sorry, Meryl, but you're just going to have to suck that up." Well, I'm sorry, folk, but you're just going to have to suck it up. Mardi Gras still rocks because along with the frivolity of the march comes hundreds of thousands of heteros gawking and very often cheering from the sidelines. But it's not all peaches and cream. The Mardi Gras parade also tends to flush out the hatred toward us, and there are many disturbing instances of bashings in and around Oxford Street in the wake of the parade. If you're planning to go to Mardi Gras for the first time, for goodness sakes, be cautious and stick to recognisably safe zones at Taylor Square and the Bobby Goldsmith stand, of course, are two that come to mind, but plenty more details on the Mardi Gras website, and you can always read the Sydney Gay Press. Of course, not everybody is making the pilgrimage to Sydney for Mardi Gras. For some of us, a weekend exploring our country roots is enough to bolster queer pride. This year, as we learn, on the same weekend as Mardi Gras, is the very famous Chill Out Festival up in Daylesford and the surrounding areas. It's the usual fanfare, a Sunday carnival, a dance party, a bit of country art, and yes, even a street parade, though I hasten to add, not nearly as luscious as the Mardi Gras parade. But while Chill Out may not boast the history and the sheer glamour of Sydney's Mardi Gras, the fact that it has sprung up proves one very important point, that queer celebrations are as much about the folk who attend them as the window dressing of the events itself themselves. Call it the human capital factor. All hail Karl Marx for drawing attention to the value of people power. How academic. For the young and freshly converted, such queer gatherings offer a real-time break from the virtual experience of Facebook and Twitter. Ooh, I'm up to date. What do you mean there's more to socialising than SMSing? For mature folk, Chill Out and Mardi Gras are about catching up with long-time friends, even if only for a brief hello, how are you? It's kind of like SMSing, but with pictures and, if you're lucky, a hug. To go all warm and fuzzy on you, festivals, by their very nature, are about connecting with each other. They're also about getting a root, but that's a sticky subject for another bonnet. I'm Kay Sarar, and I would like to wish all our women folk chookers for International Women's Day. Yes, we still need such symbolism. Now, where did I put those sensible shoes? Oh dear, I'm starting to sound more like my mother every day.
K-Sara.
Mrs. Sara in Beach
K-Sara is an honorary lesbian in Birkenstocks. The thought is horrifying. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you for that, Kay. And I'm glad you're here because on a final note, we want to have a quick chat. The community lost a true scene queen this week. Vivian St. James, one of Melbourne's most well-known performers, died and she'll be greatly missed. Don't you agree, Kay?
Yes, and thanks, Kathy, for putting aside the time. Because this has impacted, I think, on the scene. It's like a wave of grief has come over the social scene. It really has had a big impact. I think a lot of people, if they didn't know Vivian to go up and say hello, they certainly knew about, you know, the face and the image, the photographs in the paper. And we, in our B News days, oh, got the B word out, we would often talk about the number of pictures of Vivian that would come across the desk. And,
oh, we did. How, she like, was do we so put prolific.
That's right. Do we put Vivian in this week?
You know, every week she hard was work. Out there. She was certainly a hard worker, that's for sure.
One of the most impressive things, I think, in the last day or so is seeing the photos going around of the outfits. They're incredible.
Mm. And I think this is the point. I mean, you know, it's you can disagree with that lifestyle choice, but I don't think you can really criticise the kind of the vigour that
Vivian
gave to creating her life. I mean, everything you saw was created, and there was a great deal of expense and commitment to being like that, you know, and I think for that kind of communicator. But, oh, look, I guess I'd just like to say that apart from the sensational image and all of that, the Vivian that I knew was very warm and very generous, and we had a lot of contact with her through the Rainbow Awards, and she was just very, very friendly and very warm, and that's, I think, quite an unusual quality for a queen of that stature. Yeah. So it's very, it is very sad. I get a bit teary.
Well, she, I'm not sure if everyone was quite aware, but she did have a tumour and she was undergoing some treatment for that and the complications arose. So she obviously passed away this week. But looking at the testimonials on various websites across Australia, it's definitely, she was certainly well loved.
Yeah. Yep. The service is at Le Pine. I guess you call it a funeral parlour. It's in St Kilda on Carlisle Street, so just around the corner from the Greyhound, and that's on 2:30 next Wednesday. And then there'll be a wake, I imagine, at the Greyhound after that. Mm. So if anyone wants to come along, it's the middle of the day. But, yes, she's certainly well-loved and I think will be remembered.
Where was she last performing? Because I know she and the other girls had done, there was three of them that were sort of in between venues quite a bit.
Look, I think her regular gig was still at the Greyhound with the classics, but Vivian, I think this is the point. Vivian kind of worked all over the place. I mean, you know, she was, you know, a woman of transgender, a fabulous showgirl who was very much in demand. And if you needed that kind of that spot of glamour, Vivian was the person that you called. So she did a lot of guest performances and, you know, worked all over Australia, as far as I know. So, yeah, it is very sad, very tragic.
Did you have a lot to do with her personally?
Mostly through the organising of the Rainbow Awards, which we organised, I think it was for four years, or might have been five, 4 years in a row. So that was, and she was the official trophy girl. So we had a lot of contact with Vivian for those, and then just bumping into her on the scene. So it was literally kind of, hi, how are you? You look amazing. So do you. Okay, see you later. But, you know, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's, but there was, as I say, there was a great generosity and a warmth of spirit there as well. No, I never heard of Vivian. I mean, it's easy to say these things when somebody has passed away.
Yeah.
But in Vivian's case, it's true. You'd be hard-pressed to find somebody that ever heard her say a mean word about anybody, which is pretty extraordinary.
Well, from the sounds of it, I think she'll be greatly missed on the scene. There'll certainly be a shortfall in the scene pages of queer papers across Melbourne. Well, it's been something of a chicks show tonight with the first, I thought it was the first ever female host, but I've been shot down. It's coming at an appropriate time to be talking about a lot of women's issues as we head towards International Women's Day. My guests tonight were Hayley Conway from the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, Gay Retirement Village Project Developer Deborah Peppard, Beth Eldridge and Uma Kalishaki from the International Women's Day Collective, Joy's Tim Newton, Tillat President and Rainbow Report devotee Doug Pollard, Andy Noonan from Southern Star,
pot stirrer, Ron Thiel, and the Festival Ready Quesera. The show is produced with panache each week by Bianca Johnston and seamless technical production by Michael Bayliss. Thanks very much for your company tonight. We hope you've enjoyed the show. I'm Cathy Anderson, and I'm sure the big man, Doug Pollard, will be back next week for another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 news and current affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.